Welcome to A Good Technologist, a podcast about how innovators are using technology to make our society a better place in Asia and across the world. This podcast is brought to you by Better.sg, a movement to drive tech for good based in Singapore. We believe that collaborations across disciplines and diverse people can help technology drive better social outcomes. My name is Rovik and I'm your host today. Today we're going to be talking about the $1 billion industry called FemTech. In case you have not heard, FemTech refers to innovations designed to support, improve, and promote women's health. We have two established members from the FemTech space today to share with us what's going on, the challenges faced, and what the future holds for FemTech. First of all, we have Lindsay Davis, co-founder of FemTech Association Singapore, Asia's first and only industry network for professionals making a positive impact in women's health through technology. We also have Jingjin Liu, CEO and founder of ZazaZoo, Asia's first sexual well-being hub in ASEAN that synchronizes education, consultation, and curated product to empower women to own their sexuality. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rovik. Nice to see you.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been trying to have this podcast for a while, so I'm really excited we get to chat. I gave a quick introduction of both of you. If you could add anything of yourselves, or of your organization?
Of course, yeah. So first of all, thank you so much. And you said it's been a while since, you know, we've been in the planning, but I think it really demonstrates, one, that FemTech's on the move, that people are excited about this industry, and that we have a lot of male allies as well, such as yourself, who are kind of helping raise the profile of the industry, which is really exciting, because at the end of the day, it's a commercial opportunity, not just for women, but for everyone. It's a very inclusive industry. So my name is Lindsay Davis. I am the co-founder of the FemTech Association of Asia. We launched in October of 2021 with a mission to inspire collaboration in Asia's FemTech industry to accelerate the creation of more healthcare solutions for more women. And just to touch on what is FemTech before I hand over to my member, colleague, and friend Jingjin, FemTech basically is any type of technology solution that supports women's health. That can be products, services, diagnostic tools, onward and onward. So I think a lot of people, as an easy reference point, would be a menstrual tracking or period tracking app. So maybe just to put that in the mind of the types of technology we're talking about to start, but it obviously can get a lot more detailed. So Jingjin, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And thank you, Rovik, for having me as well. So I'm the founder of ZazaZoo. We started 2020 as the first sexual well-being hub in Asia that synchronizes education, consultation, and product to empower women, Asian women specifically, to own our sexuality. And we have pivoted several times through some challenges, which we'll mention later in the podcast. And we have become now the first B2B education platform that's targeting association and corporates to help women, modern women, to navigate through challenges in the workplace and at home. So we want women to own our, I would say, narrative, both in the workplace and at home. So we tackle taboo topics such like microaggression and sexism. We talk about a female health, the womb story, the whole journey that the women go through with our body, as well as how to build confidence in our competence. And lastly, we talk about relationship. At the end of the day, we bring our whole person into the workplace. So who we are at home is reflected who we are at work as well.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I was just thinking about the term FemTech, right? And Lindsay, my familiarity with the term was really through you and the work that you've been doing. But it's one of those terms where you hear it once and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere, right? And you're like, whoa, I didn't know that this was such a big thing. I also know that it only started becoming really, really well known, at least digitally, maybe since 2019. That's when, you know, we were able to see a spike in Google search trends around this term. What do you think has driven FemTech to actually become more spoken about, more discussed about, and more importantly, actually something that investors and business people are taking seriously?
Historically, women's health, and when I say women, please know I mean women as well as those with women's healthcare needs. So again, a very inclusive industry. So historically, women's health has been under-researched, underserved, and underfunded. And we can go through a lot of examples of that. But perhaps to answer your question first, it's why is the term FemTech really taking off, or why is the industry gaining ground? I think, first of all, as I mentioned, it's been underserved. So there's a huge, 50% of the world's population, if not more, I've heard 51% as the quote as well. If half of the world's population isn't having their healthcare needs addressed directly, that's a huge consumer segment that we can speak with and that we have as a spending opportunity. I think when we look at women controlling 90% of home healthcare spend for the family, according to Frost and Sullivan, or 80% of decision-making in the healthcare space for their families. So I think there's a large presence of women always having made the decisions, maybe putting themselves on the back burner in many instances and not addressing their health specifically, that I think this is a great time for women to really step up and take ownership of their health. I think many women are more concerned, me included, about preventative health. So actually saying, how can I get ahead of the curve and not wait until something's wrong? When I'm limited on time, I'm limited on money, I'm limited on knowledge, and how can I build these things? And how can I be a part of a broader community, which really is what FemTech does. First and foremost, it's starting with a point of education and community building across all of our different businesses. And what I think is exciting investors is just a completely untapped market and the rise of the chicanomy and women really having these purse strings that we control and that we're ready to invest in our well-being.
Women this generation are more aware. They grow up, especially the Gen Z, they grow up with social media. I would say the generation between Gen Z and Gen Y, somewhere in between, so people in their 30s, the narrative that, when I have pain, I go to a doctor somewhere, let it be the breast, let it be the womb, let it be anywhere. If the doctor tell me, this is just, just take a Panadol and live with it, a lot of women nowadays, they won't obey. So what they're going to do is that, okay, something must be wrong. Let me Google it or let me find something in the internet for solutions. Then a lot of femtech solutions will automatically come out, firstly. And secondly, generate the awareness in the public with the female empowerment, with Me Too, with all this movement has contributed to the fact that women are saying, okay, sex is not just a duty anymore. I want to take care of myself. Even when I have a baby, I want to come up first as well. So the narrative has massively changed in the past, maybe just 2-3 years.
I think I can definitely see that even as a male, looking at the ecosystem, that actually the whole conversation around, first of all, the opportunity space, right, and actually enabling women or supporting women needs. And then secondly, also thinking about how the greater participation of women in the workforce also creates a new set of needs in themselves.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's a big thing. When we look at the definition of femtech, right, just to really unpack this, we talked about health, but the concept of health also is huge, right? We're not just talking about physical health or about sexual health, but really about holistic health. And I think, Qingqing, you were talking about what ZazaZoo does, and it really sounds like it's looking at that holistic element. How flexible is this term, firstly? And then secondly, what are some of the kind of examples of FemTech solutions out there?
Women's health, as a loose term, obviously comes down to every part of a woman's life. And that comes down to physical health, mental health, relationship health, societal health, employment health, financial health. So I do hear what you're saying as far as really a woman's health is all of these things and all encompassing. At the moment for FemTech here in Asia in particular, and Southeast Asia, I'll say even more so, I think we really focus on right now. I think, I hope to expand in the future and bring on more. We already are across 9 countries in Asia. Southeast Asia, Japan, Hong Kong, Korea as well. So would love to really expand that. But for FemTech right now, we really are focusing on kind of those first two pieces around physical and mental well-being. As far as the different solutions that are out there, I think there are a number. I think first of all, Robic, you touched on something really interesting, which is that women are starting to speak about, and Jingjin did as well with our younger generations, which is so exciting, is we're starting to see women addressing their healthcare needs in their everyday lives. An example would be 59% of women say that menopause has negatively affected their work or their experience at work. So almost 60%, which is huge. So what are we doing to support those women? And I think that's where FemTech solutions, again, whether it's through education platforms in the B2B space, which Jingjing has, or B2C tools, like creating, you know, a personalized healthcare plan for women who are in that stage. As far as what we cover in member categories, here with the Femtech Association of Asia, believe it or not, the most common businesses that we find in Femtech are sex tech and sexual health businesses. Now, the reason I say that's surprising is that a lot of people talk about the culture and the taboos.
Yeah, I was going to say, that wasn't going to be my first guess.
Absolutely. And then secondly, we add on that globally, menstrual care and menstrual wellness are number one. So I think that that really demonstrates that ownership, the key word is ownership, and I think you'll hear us use that again and again. And I think it's not about sex per se, it's about health and wellness and taking care of oneself. So an example of a femtech solution there would be a company like Ease Healthcare or Fern Health, which have at-home STI testing kits, or they can send a phlebologist for blood testing to your home. So it really takes away the friction of needing to, you know, go to the doctor's office and book an appointment, commute there. It really eliminates some of those minor obstacles that we have here in Singapore specifically. Now, talking about broader markets, obviously there are going to be different challenges. Things like access, you know, the doctor-patient ratio in other countries is much higher in Southeast Asia. Infrastructure challenges, whether it's, you know, as simple as not great roads, so it takes 2 hours or 3 hours to get to the doctor, so you only go once there's a definite problem, as opposed to maybe here in Singapore, where it's just a small island, we can kind of get to the doctor in 10 minutes. So I think there are some things to look at with femtech, with telehealth, and actually making sure that there's that specialty on the other end of the phone, or the other end of the, excuse, you know, the virtual experience, where there's a doctor who's really familiar with reproductive health, maternal health, fertility, sexual health, and any other type of health, you know, that we can think of. So telemedicine is very powerful. So we're seeing some really great, not only variation of categories, but also engagement from bigger corporate brands that are starting to step in. We've worked with MyRepublic, who's been a really great supporter. And, you know, we look at a telecoms company saying women's health is important, which is kudos to MyRepublic and what a great partner for us. So some of these big corporates are starting to step in, which is exciting.
What I'm thinking back is really that even at a young stage, or, you know, relatively young stage, there's already a lot of vibrancy and there's already a lot of activity, right? Which actually is quite exciting. And it only means that there's so much more that can happen. On that same note, you know, while there's a lot of vibrancy, it's still important to acknowledge that the appetite for investment in femtech, whether it's on the research side, or whether it's even on sort of putting dollars behind some of these initiatives and startups, it's not matching your global averages for some of these other segments out there. What do you think is, I guess, the key reasons for this? I think we both know what some of the reasons are, but, you know, let's just put it out there. And then secondly, what more could be done in order to really drive that volume up?
So when we look at the global femtech footprint, Asia only represents about 14% of businesses in the femtech space. However, we are accelerating very rapidly, which is where my excitement comes from being involved. And it's watching this industry grow exponentially. That also means there's a lot of white space. So there's a lot of opportunities for entrepreneurs to come in and start businesses. So when we talk about what needs to be done to kind of inspire further growth in the sector, I think, one, it's encouraging, you know, we can start all the way back to like grade school age and say we need to be encouraging women in STEM and making sure that young women know that they are more than capable and frankly, incredibly talented and bright and the perfect people to start emphasizing women's healthcare. And that could be inventors, people working in R&D, making sure that even at that investment stage in R&D, that women's needs in particular, women's health in particular, is being invested in that early on, even before we get to the business side. When we talk about women being underserved, I think a lot of it is around making sure that we're sharing the information and the education out so that more women are actually demanding solutions and not just kind of waiting for something to happen. But again, it's back to that ownership and actually going out and finding solutions. And part of our role as the Femtech Association of Asia is to promote these solutions so women know that they have options, and to Jingchen's point, to not just have to live with it, as you know, which is not a solution. You know, living with pain or living with discomfort, living with questions, that doesn't have to happen anymore. We can work together for solutions. And then funding, I'm going to hand over to Jingjin, but maybe just a quick note that globally, only 2% of VC funding goes to women now. So when we look at the, you know, femtech space in particular, it's kind of carries that low rate of investment. And according to McKinsey, I believe it was something around only 3% of digital healthcare funding goes towards women's health or femtech in particular. So we are dealing with some challenging numbers, but I think with the really brilliant solutions that are coming up, investors are going to keep taking note. And what we're looking for really are early adopter, long-term investors, people who see the future and aren't just waiting to ride the tide, but to actually be leaders in the space with their investment. Jingjin, what do you think about the financial side?
I have fundraised for ZazaZoo from day one. So when we started in 2020, March, it was basically an idea based on paper. And at that time, we had 12 angel investors, collected a six-digit amount of dollars with a small VC as well, fairly fast, due to the fact that I have built a company before and exited that company as well. So it's always easier for investors generally to back a founder that has already exited the business. So that was an exception. But generally, when I was raising my seed round with only VCs at that time, what I could observe is, firstly, so this is not an unknown fact, but I love to emphasize this again and again, out of 10 general partner or limited partner, 9 are men. Mm-hmm. The lack of representation of women in the investment space is scarce. When you have to introduce a product, that be menstrual health or menopause or any female specific issue, into a panel or into a venture judgment panel full of men, it is just, it's simply not relatable for them. I mean, you can't blame them, because they can't imagine what it's like to have, you know, hot flushes. They might be able to relate with their daughters when they have menstrual pain, with their wives. But nonetheless, it's very difficult for them to understand actually the difficulties, firstly. And secondly, if you can't relate, obviously you don't put the investment inside. Secondly, a lot of femtech solution, this more go to a little bit more of female-driven business. Female-driven business, often, we don't think about scalability. We think about, let's do good first. So a lot of femtech companies are not VC-backable, generally. Just the business model will not yield 10x within 5 years. It's simply not possible. Therefore, the business model as such is already VC unfriendly. Therefore, I always advocate, you know, with an angel network for people who are really the individual believers, that would be an easier route. And I think lastly is that women generally underpromise and overdeliver. So when women pitch in towards to, especially when you come to femtech, it's still a taboo topic. When you pitch, you automatically put yourself into a little bit of a defensive position, because you simply don't have that much, you know, track record, or there aren't that many companies have exited in the femtech space yet. So you can't establish precedence actually for the investors. So generally, you already step into a space when you pitch to the VCs or any other institutional investors, you are already disadvantaged. That's why the podcast like this, you know, really help us to, you know, spread the word and help people understand how many solutions are there, and also to help investors to understand what kind of opportunity they might be missing out.
Just thinking that there's so many threads to unpack here, so which one do I start with, right? Let's talk about the lack of funding for women-led startups and ventures. And I recently attended the She Loves Tech conference run by a good friend, Leanne, and her team. And Leanne and her team are passionate about closing the funding gap, right? That's their big sort of overarching mission for women-led startups. And one of the key things that keeps coming up is basically, at the end of the day, we need to get more women in general involved in the ecosystem, right? So yes, more founders, but also more women investors, also more women-led accelerators, also more women-led advisors, really just driving more representation, but also creating more sensitivity, right? Actually, I think, Jingjin, you were very sort of generous to say that guys may not perceive or understand women issues. But the truth is that, you know, most VCs don't understand a lot about most of the sectors, right? They have to go and do their due diligence. They have to assume a position of humility, yeah, and basically do research, right? And so why not take that same approach for women issues, or femtech investments, right? So actually, there is a need for a lot more, not just women participation for representation, but also to actually drive these conversations and make sure that the voices are heard and proliferated within the ecosystem. So I think a lot of the work that Zazazu and Femtech Association, as well as, you know, a lot of the other players are doing, is definitely relevant and important. I think the second point around the role of trying to be impact-driven, but at the same time trying to be profitable and viable as a business. I was trying to reconcile that notion that if you are in the femtech space, maybe you care more about impact first, and therefore you're not able to communicate. It's not that it doesn't exist a value story there, but you're not able to communicate that. But then I look at a lot of the other sub-segments within the healthcare space that are able to get tons of funding, right? In biotech, in the global healthcare space, you get tons of VC, if not PE funding behind you. What do you think is actually the opportunity there then to recraft the narrative, right, around femtech from just something around in a social impact to really, again, a clear economic paradigm shift in how we seize opportunities? Yeah.
If you, let's just talk about an numbers game and then just forget about the impact for a while. When you talk about health, usually the health, let's say something with heart diseases, it's always about men and women. That's relatable for everyone. In the moment where you take away something specific for men, for example, let's say erectile dysfunction, this is something that we are talking about, something that is crucial for manhood. That's why this is one of the areas where it's actually well-funded, well-researched, because this is crucial for men, for human nature to further exist as well.
Oh, so you're saying that erectile dysfunction treatments are actually well-funded? I did not know that. Yes. Interesting.
In the moment where you cut the other half of the population out and talk about women's health, think about women's health. What are we talking about? The uterus, we talk about breast, we talk about things that in every culture, it's like, okay, big taboo. It's like, okay, let's not, you know, in some culture, you can only have female doctors to be gynecologists, for example. In the moment where people talk about specific women's health, the VCs or institution investment already closed down, at least so far. In the moment where they say, it's for the other part of the population, women's specific, then I have more conversions work to do. For example, let's pick up sexual health. Usually when women have a sexual health issue, usually they don't recognize this. And then their gynecologists won't recognize this as well. We often have this case with our clients when she go to the doctor saying, okay, I have extremely painful sex, for example. The doctor here will say, okay, what's the problem? They will assess physically. Often it's not a physical dysfunction. Very often it's a mental block, or for some women, very rare case, they do have, you know, vaginalism. It's a circumstances that, you know, the vagina will close really down in the moment where penetration happens. So they will say, basically, suck through it. You are a woman. Your duty is to have sex, you know, to further have babies and so on. It's about reproductive health. So there is no need to treat. This is the message. The majority of doctors in this region will give women. So you already have a funnel. Let's say 100 women have this issue. 20 dare to go to doctor. 15 doctors will tell you that thing. And then you left out with 5 doctors and say, okay, you might have vaginalism and you can do ABCD to do that. So at the end of the day, if you look at it from VC perspective, out of the 100 patients, I can maximum convert 5. So in that case, it is a small business for me versus when I have erectile dysfunction, every man will treat it. Out of 100, 100 will treat it. So I think this is actually the paradigm shift. We have to make it clear for health, especially for digital health, kind of a VC or PE firm to understand. As you said at the beginning, we need to get more women, let's say health provider, female founders, female investor into the ecosystem to advocate what femtech means.
There's actually a number of our members. We kind of divide our membership into industry and enthusiast members. And enthusiasts are people kind of where I started, and now I consider myself part of the industry, but with just people who are passionate about making sure that women have options for their care. And so we have women from Meta, women from who are in brand, women who work at Google, you know, who are in communications, women who work for all these different businesses, lawyers, you know. So I think it just goes to show that this is something in an industry that not only do women understand, they see the need for and they want to contribute to it. Even if they're not contributing in a professional sense, i.e. day in, day out working in women's health, they want to contribute to spreading the word of femtech and really raising the profile of women's healthcare needs.
For anyone listening here right now, it's becoming more and more clear that the femtech space is a space that folks should definitely take seriously, should definitely look into as an opportunity space, especially if it's something already adjacent to work that you're doing. This podcast is publicly listenable, but it also directly targets our Better.sg community, right? Folks who are in the tech for good space. This is both developers, designers, people in some of the domains that you may have mentioned already. What would you recommend as easy entry points in order to get involved, in order to maybe see how they can make an impact? And I want to also maybe add a nuance here, which is that, as you would imagine, a lot of the people in our community right now, just because of demographics, right? It's an inherited demographics are male. So what would you also say to the male demographics involved on why they should care about femtech?
For male, we definitely need more men to, you know, to be on this movement and journey with us. And we already see great men and, you know, husbands and partners. And from the VC space, we already see a great shift from women only, because it's sometimes when we are talking about femtech, it sounds inclusive, but men shy away from, you know, when you talk about sex, vagina, all these kind of terms. But we actually get more and more. If I just compare 2022, the direct message I get from LinkedIn, this is where I get actually most of my businesses. And this is like the social media platform we as Zazazoo use. And I get more and more men giving feedback into, you know, our offerings and want to sign their wives up and want to sign them up. Can we do this course together? Bringing men into the conversation is crucial, because at the end of the day, let's be very blunt and frank, we still live a bit in the patriarchal system. A lot of things are dominated by men and ruled by men in order to free, I wouldn't say women as minority, but as I would say, the less privileged compared to men, you actually need the higher power to lead the movement. So just a bunch of women saying, okay, let's empower each other, that's not enough. We definitely need the higher power from the investment side, from politics side, to lead the movement with the advocates together.
When it comes to getting involved overall, I would love to obviously invite everyone to follow the Femtech Association of Asia on LinkedIn. I would love to invite everyone to follow us on Instagram at Femtech Asia. Would love anyone who's interested in getting involved from the corporate perspective, whether it's through partnership or sponsorship, to contact me, Lindsay Davis, or the Femtech Association of Asia via LinkedIn. And then finally, I'm super excited to have this platform to announce that we have the largest ever Femtech or Women's Health Summit that we are partnering with the Women's Health Innovation Series out of the UK. We're actually bringing that to the first ever summit to Asia. So it's been held before in Basel, Switzerland, London, and Boston. And we're really excited that on the 22nd and 23rd of March of 2023, we will be hosting the Women's Health Innovation Summit for Asia here in Singapore. So definitely invite everyone to join us there. And if anyone's interested in knowing more details, please feel free to reach out. Happy to chat with anyone anytime about women's health, business, entrepreneurship, mentoring young people to join us in women's health, or just for people who are interested in the tech space and investment to know what opportunities are out there, please contact us.
Folks who are interested can definitely go check this out. Before we wrap up, we always like to ask this question for everyone in one word. If you could describe the future of tech, what would it be?
So for me, it's enabler. I've done 10 angel investment this year, have read, I think, almost 100 decks. What occurred to me is that in the tech area generally, I would say my self-perception, 50 to 80% people are building business for the and adding tech for the sake of adding tech. There are areas in our life you don't need tech. The world will be a better place without tech in certain area. So whenever anyone build a tech solution, the tech need to be an enabler and not the other way around. And this is valid for any kind of tech.
And for me, the one word that would describe my thoughts on the future of tech, specifically with a femtech focus, would be choice. I think that technology is going to be a great choice, not only for entrepreneurs, not only for investors, but also for consumers.
Awesome. I love those words. I had a great time learning about femtech and learning about the great work that the both of you are doing. I'm really grateful that we finally managed to get this slot going. and to have this conversation. And for all our listeners, today's topic resonated with you. Find a way to get involved. I think it's an exciting space, and I think there's a lot more in the future of this space. Once again, thank you, Lindsay and Qingqing, for coming on our show.
Thank you so much, Rovik. It's always so good to see you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Good Technologist. If you like what we are doing, you can always find out more on our website, better.sg. And subscribe to the podcast via your typical channels such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever app you prefer. This podcast was produced by Grace So and edited by myself, Rovik Robin. Our email address is goodtech@better.sg. Let us know what you think.